95.9 The Fox. It's First Thing Fairfield County. Good morning. I'm Alan Lamberti. And coming up Saturday night, March 23rd at the Ridgefield Playhouse, will be an interview with Blythe Danner. She's going to be live on the stage being interviewed by the one and only Mr. Dick Cavett, who's on the line with me right now. How's it going?
Well, okay so far. And you haven't offended me yet. And I think we might as well go ahead.
Excellent. We're off to a good start.
Yeah.
So we're really looking forward to this event coming up next month. How did this all come about?
Well, I had gone to the wonderful theater here and chatted about things, and somebody said, "Why don't you do something here?" And this is what came of it. Yeah, I've known Blythe since, I guess the late 50s. When we were both at Williamstown, Massachusetts, the great summer theater there at Williamstown, and Dwight would and Blythe would thrill everyone every time she stepped onto the stage. Just a wonderful, wonderful actress, and as you know, you don't need me to tell you. But we hit it off because we're both part. Largely German, it seems, in our ancestry. So one day, I was humming, or she was, da 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 da, the Marlene Dietrich's trademark song, and as I was humming it, it was myself who was humming. Dwight joined in German.
Oh.
So I joined Blythe in German, and thus we are Bund members under the skin, I guess. a harmless Bund, of course. Yeah, but that was fun. Yeah, there's nobody quite like her. She is superb.
In a sense, what this is going to be is kind of like what you did on television, but live on stage.
Yeah, that's really what it will be. I haven't decided anything what we will talk about necessarily.
Is that how you approached your show? It was kind of whatever came up naturally?
No, there was always somebody on the staff who made notes going all the way back through Jack Parr. He would have each guest assign someone on the staff, and they would make some notes either from meeting with them or if the guest didn't want to be met with or bothered on the telephone in their hotel room. The guest, the talent coordinator, as they were called, on the staff, would put together whatever he or she, isn't that awkward, could think of. And sometimes the wisest thing you could do would be abandon your notes if the conversation suddenly takes off in a good direction.
Oh, certainly. And you were an expert at that. There were so many instances in your show. And you interviewed pretty much everybody. Was there anybody that you couldn't because they never agreed to it?
I would love to have done a show with Frank Sinatra. I think he was kind of wary of it, although we were always cordial when we met at a Friars Club or party or something. But I think we would have had a great time. And also Cary Grant. And I'm afraid I didn't press hard enough. I think I had him halfway there. But then he said, well, Kate was so great on the show, and people will find out how dumb I am. And I said, tactfully, well, Mr. Grant, you can only be so dumb, I'm sure. Fortunately, he laughed at that. And Sinatra, I was given a number to call in New Jersey, and I thought, maybe I'm going to get him. And the phone rang, and, yeah. I said, hi, my name is Dick Cavett. I do a talk show called The Dick Cavett Show, and I told the call today about Mr. Sinatra maybe appearing on the show. I don't know what you're talking about. And I could picture the cigar butt in this guy's mouth. Finally, it came to Frank, don't do shit like that. You know, I mean, I don't know who the hell you are. And then I said, thank you, ma'am, and hung up.
That's a good line. That's a good one.
I think it was at least a bouncer or a hitman.
Well, he ran in interesting circles at the very least.
Yes, sir.
You were mentioning Cary Grant, and you mentioned Katharine Hepburn in that. That was an interview. She wouldn't do it in front of an audience. She would only do it one-on-one.
She asked for no audience, but I didn't want to argue with her, though I thought that would be too bad. But as we got going, guys from the band started drifting into the studio, and somebody else called a friend and said, hurry up over here. And that's why for the last half of, at least, of my time with Hepburn, you could hear laughter.
Yeah,
she was worried. And there's a thing on YouTube called Katharine Hepburn Rearranges the Furniture, in which she came, no other guests ever did this, came in ahead of the day they were supposed to be on and wanted to see where they sat and how far away the lights were. And where she didn't know television at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I secretly taped her checking out the studio, taking a big risk. Because I could imagine the voice saying, I found out what you did, Mr. Cavett, and goodbye forever, and hanging up. But she thought it was a good idea. She sent somebody to view it to see if we could use it on the show. And the person who came and viewed it had a babushka that hid most of her face, the immaculate white pants and sandals, and everything else that Katharine Hepburn always wore. And she was recognized by somebody who worked for me. She never admitted that she had come in and seen it.
Wow.
But what you see on that is her arguing with one point with a stagehand. She said, what's this fence sort of thing here? We don't need that. And he said, well, we'd have to unscrew the whole. Don't tell me what's wrong. Just fix it.
I'm talking with Dick Cavett, who will be at the Ridgefield Playhouse on Saturday night, March 23rd, for an interview with Blythe Danner. And you actually live in Ridgefield now. You moved here about a year or two ago?
Yes, and I don't know that it's been more. It's more like a year by now, yeah. Yeah, and oddly, I had never been here before.
Really?
But what I love about living here is that I'm in a house that once held a man named Eric Weitz, who was better known to the public as Harry Houdini.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I watched for his ghost. And one old-timer remembered as a kid sneaking into the bushes and watching Houdini working on his underwater escapes in the swimming pool.
Oh, wow.
How I would envy that.
Is the pool still there, or they rebuilt it?
I can't be sure it's the same.
Oh, man.
But if it is, I think we should check it for DNA.
Sure. Have a seance out there and have people conjure up his spirit.
Well, you know, every year for decades, the great Harry Blackstone, magician, and a couple of others had a night, the night of Houdini's death, in which they waited, left a candle burning, a slate and chalk, anything that a spirit might need.
Mm-hmm.
But they came up blank every time.
Oh, it never panned out.
Nah, he was a nasty man.
Houdini was, or Blackstone?
Houdini.
Oh.
The great Di Vernon, the dean of American magicians, who died a couple of years. Johnny Carson took me to the Magic Castle one night. We sat with Vernon, who's the king of all magicians in those days. He died a few years ago. And he said, I was in Harry's dressing room one night, and a kind of a valet type came in and laid a shirt down. Harry didn't like the way he laid it down, and he smacked him across the face with the back of his hand.
Huh.
And I said, Harry, you can't treat people like that. And you know what he said? I am Houdini.
He could do whatever he wanted.
Yeah, that gives you the license to whack anybody you want.
Now, you mentioned your home in Ridgefield. You hadn't been to Ridgefield before, but as I was doing my research, it's funny. You're now in Ridgefield in Connecticut. Jack Parr ultimately moved to Greenwich. David Letterman from New Canaan. Is there something about Midwestern talk show hosts and Connecticut that just go together?
My God, I think you're onto something. I think we should get a survey and a scientific examination of this. I don't think Jack Parr ever lived here, did he? No, he lived in Bronxville. And
he did live in, I believe he might have lived in Greenwich for a time, just south.
You know, I think you're right. That rings a bell. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's. Well, you never. Well, hey. Well, we're glad you're here, and we're glad we'll see you at the Ridgefield Playhouse on March 23rd. There's also another Connecticut connection. You have one of my all-time favorite cameo moments in the movie Beetlejuice, which takes place in Connecticut, and now it's about to open up on Broadway. Do you have any plans to see it?
To see Beetlejuice?
On Broadway. They're doing it on Broadway next month.
Oh, that's news. You're bringing me all kinds of news. I must be out of it.
No.
I only read the racing form these days because the papers are so depressing. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to remember how many years ago that was. But backstage shooting my scene in Beetlejuice, a nice-looking young man came over and said hello, and he said, "You don't know me. I'm on a soap called something something." Mm-hmm. I don't know what soap it was. And then I said, "Are you in the movie?" And he said, "Yeah." And they said, "Nice meeting you. What's your name anyway?" And he said, "Baldwin, Alec." It was juvenile Alec Baldwin in the movie.
They're going to be doing it on Broadway. It hasn't opened yet, so I'm curious to see if somebody is portraying you on stage.
Yeah, who the hell's going to get my part? They'll probably figure I'm not right for it.
Well, your voice is still there. You still have it, and so I think you could do it. And you're no stranger to the stage, obviously.
No, maybe the most wonderful time I have ever had was doing a play on Broadway for months, a British play called Otherwise Engaged, and then I had to stop because my PBS show started, and it was a bit much to do both, and that was wonderful. I couldn't wait to get to the theater every night.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had every other line in a two-act play.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot to remember.
And usually I got them in the right order. Yeah. Well, good talking to you. Yeah, you make it painless.
Well, I try. Yes, thank you very much. I don't want to keep you too long.
It's okay.
A lot of in-depth interviews like you did and like you'll be doing have sort of moved away from traditional broadcasting to podcasting. Is that something you could see yourself doing?
Yes, it is. I'm sort of halfway in line to be doing that. And people keep saying nobody's doing on TV what you did. I never know quite what they mean unless they're thinking of the sort of large number of 90-minute shows I did.
Mm-hmm.
But or they say, well, people are on for only 7 minutes nowadays. And in show business, that only gets them time to use the word excited 4 times. Oh, I'm so excited about my new director. We're excited about our home. I once had enough and said, do you go around in a constant state of excitement? And a few people in the audience clapped. And the person saying its eyelids were at half mast, so there was very little sign of excitement in the face.
Yeah, it just seems like it's something. You know, a lot of those sort of interviews are kind of made for YouTube. They're kind of made for quick sort of hits. But you're right, that sort of in-depth, which you used to do, whether it was one person or multiple guests, it just doesn't exist.
Well, and the day before, almost a week before I started the ABC show, in the morning, as it was then, I got a surprise phone call from Jack Parr. And I said, Jack, have you got any advice for me? And he said, yes, kid, don't do interviews.
All right.
And I said, well, what do I read to them or what? He said, no, interviews. That's dry. That's Q&A. That's what's your favorite this. That's what David Frost falling asleep on his front of his clipboard. Make it a conversation. And that really is the best advice you can get.
Well, that's what we'll be seeing Saturday night, March 23rd. Last but not least, how did this interview go?
I was just going to say, isn't that what we're doing now? But, yeah. Yeah, you, so I usually hate this, and I don't hate this one. What is it you're doing right?
I don't know. I'm just being me. I guess that's the solution.
I don't know if there's an, I'm trying to think if there's an anagram for Lamberti, but if I try for one, they don't come. But when you have a boring guest like Spiro Agnew, and it makes you angry how boring and dull it is. And my anagram curse, where I rearrange the letters of almost everything I look at, kicked in 2 minutes after Agnew left the studio.
Oh, wow.
Spiro Agnew, 10 letters, rearranged, grow a penis. Check it out.
I got to grab a piece of scrap paper, but I believe you. I'll take your word at that.
Oh, I told Gore Vidal, and he said, you could do grow a spine, too, with the same letters, but yours is better. Anyway, there we are. A word for anagrams.
Oh, wow. Yeah, my name's kind of tough. I wasn't going to ask, so. But
well, if I'm told someone's name and said, do one of me, it jams. The mechanism is sort of unconscious.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because you're under the pressure of it. You can't, like.
I guess table rim comes to mind.
Okay.
I haven't checked it. Is that legitimate?
I've never looked it up.
Yeah, check it out.
All right, I will.
You're better off than Agnew. Whatever it is.
Whatever happened to that guy?
if I think of a good, I wish I'd gotten that to Ms. Maddow, who's constantly pronounced Maddow wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I'd gotten it to her when she did her 5-part thing about Agnew, but I didn't know about it till it was too late.
Oh.
I'm gonna still send it to her. Yeah, Rachel.
Rachel Maddow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh wow. Well, Mr. Cavett, it's been an absolute pleasure. This was really great opportunity to speak with you, and we're really looking forward to your interview with Blythe Danner on Saturday, March 23rd at the Ridgefield Playhouse.
Thank you, Merit Lab.
I'll take that
coming.
One. I like
I can't
that one.
Stop it. I will speak to you again one day, I have a feeling.
All right, I hope so. This was great.
Yeah, it's fun.
Thank you.
Are you there?
Yeah, so I'm here.
Oh, I was just thinking of a nice way to say goodbye. I thought you had to go.
I mean, I don't. I don't want to keep you too long, you know.
Yeah, I have another few minutes.
Oh, all right.
You can make the most of them.
All right. Well, one question that I was going to ask, I found out today is actually the anniversary of the last time Muhammad Ali was on your show.
Oh, I am very happy you mentioned that. Yeah. A friend of mine has named Robert Bader, a TV producer. He did the two PBS shows I did called Dick Cavett's Watergate and Dick Cavett's Vietnam a couple mm-hmm. of years ago. And this one, we found, as he was going through all my tapes and arranging them and things, he said, my God, you know that Ali was on your show? And I'm not sure if it was 19 or 20 times.
Oh, wow.
Great stuff. And he was able to put together a special on that that's either an hour and a half. That'll be sometime, I think, this month. But, God, there was so much stuff he could have done another whole show with it. And it even has the great Al Sharpton in it. Yeah, Ali and I became improbable friends. We kind of hung out together. And, of course, as you can see, our backgrounds are much the same. But we really were good buddies, and I'll never get over that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you have a particular favorite Muhammad Ali memory?
Yes. Well, there's the time he and Joe Frazier picked me up and held me up in the air.
I've seen that photo. Yes.
That's probably on, that may be on YouTube, too. But then they sort of squeezed me between them, these two monsters, the white fellow in the middle. And I looked at the monitor and I said, it looks like a giant Oreo cookie.
Oh, that's funny.
So, but he called me his main man once when he'd been, he came on with his jaw wired from Ken Norton. Who was it? Broke his jaw. He said, he was very subdued. He said, Dick, you're my only friend. You know, nobody call me now to be on any talk show except you. I'm just an old broke down fighter with a wired up jaw, but you're my main man.
Wow.
And black people said to me, do you know what that means in our world, to be called someone's main man?
Oh,
and
man.
I found out. Yeah, that was great.
That's so cool.
Now I probably should buzz off or I'm going to miss my dentist.
Well, you don't know. Teeth are important, so I will not keep you any further. This was an absolute pleasure, and
I'm glad.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Don't be a stranger.
I will not. Thank you very much. This was
a
great
honor.
Think
of a real, oh my God, Lamberti. Tribal me.
Tribal me. All right. The last one was Tablet Lab. Was that it? Oh, no. Merit Lab.
If I think of a good dirty one, I'll send it to you.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Something that'll compete with Spiro.
Mr. Cabot, thank you very, very much.
Bye-bye.